You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hola, hello everyone. Welcome back. It's Series 9, Episode 33 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. We are back from Lisbon. A bit of a disappointing night in the end. We'll touch on it briefly. We're not going to spend too long on the international stuff tonight because I'm literally only just back from Lisbon in the last couple of hours. So we said we'd knock out a pod. And obviously the game against Armenia, by the time most people listen to this, it'll have come and gone. So we'll probably speak about the international team a bit more next week. Tonight we're going to focus on League of Ireland matters and some of the things we missed while we were away. Obviously, Dundalk won the title Friday night, so Ed Irvin is going to join us on the pod. We'll look back at the other talking points from the First Division. We had the FAI Cup semi-finals that we didn't discuss last week because we had no show with us been in Lisbon, so we need to talk about those. The latest from the League of Ireland Premier Division as well. Rovers just drawing it out a little bit, trying to wrap up this title. We had European games while we were away as well, so there's a lot to catch up on, and that great news as well about the academy money last week that broke too. So definitely lots to get through. But Gary, how are you keeping?
Not too bad at all. Had a nice time in Lisbon. Got back last night, so quick trip.
But very much a fly-in visit from yourself.
It was. Went over Saturday morning after the town match on Friday.
Good job on the comms, by the way. A couple of tweets saying great job.
Yeah, I was definitely thinking I want to enjoy this goal myself, never mind the commentary. But it was good that Longford Town deservedly won on the night. Great to see. But
four in a row.
Bit
late to the last time that happened.
2022, I think Stato LOI put it up. It was 2022 that happened.
When was the last time they've done five in a row? Is the bigger question.
Well, we'll tweet him. Look, it was good. Good weekend. No hiccups or anything like that. Obviously, the result in Lisbon wasn't fantastic. Should we get through that now, will we?
Yeah. I obviously made a long haul of it. Hence, while there was no pod last week, I was out there Tuesday through to Monday. Great time. It's a lovely city. That's my first time in Lisbon. I've been in Portugal a few times, but it was always the Algarve. Really clean city, lovely city to walk around. Now, there is dodgy areas as well, but just you get that with most cities as well. But very, very reasonable, very cheap. And as we touched on the pod before we went away, that's super buck, lad. That is just God's nectar.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. I was struggling. I had a bit of time to kill before the flight last night, so I was walking around Lisbon and I did to a few places. It was like, oh, Sagres only. I was just turned around and walked out. Eventually had like three pints of it at a kebab shop not too far from the...
Yeah, it's amazing. I was saying this, you can pretty much get alcohol anywhere. It's obvious the Portuguese can handle themselves. Like shopping centres, beer everywhere. I went to the cinema last night, which was just a nice way to round off the trip with herself. There was a VIP experience, 20 quid. You get a bit of food beforehand. No, it's pure shite. The food's just like pizza and nuggets and nachos and blah, blah, blah. But you get alcohol with it as well. So I was able to bring a load of bottle of Estrella into the cinema. Wee table for me there and off you go. But yeah, I don't think that would work here somehow.
No, probably not. But yeah, look, I've been to Lisbon a few times this year, actually. So yeah, nice little city.
Lots of walking in it. I went up to Sintra one of the days as well. Lovely castles and classy little spot, but just the legs were in bits after it now.
Yeah, well, look, that's part of it.
City of Seven Hills, I think, if I was listening rightly on some of the tours I was on.
I've never been on a tour in the place. I wouldn't know anything about it.
The Benfica Stadium tour, by the way. Absolutely top class.
Yeah, it's a lovely stadium, isn't it?
I highly recommend to anyone that hasn't done it. The VR, the virtual reality part of it was nearly worth the 20 quid alone.
Oh, very good. I've been to a game in that stadium. I've never done the tour. So yeah,
a bit of Ireland fans a bit unhappy about the away end the other night in the Sporting Stadium. The netting was up. Didn't actually bother me that much at all.
No, I didn't. But it cost me a thought. Like that'd be common in a lot of European stadiums.
It was a massive holdback after the game, though. That was the longest holdback I've seen, and even outside then, the riot police were tooled up to the heavens.
Yeah.
Now again, I I'd imagine they've had much hardier fan bases than us visit there, and it's probably just protocol, but it was over the top.
Like there was, the batons were out in like a lot of policemen's hands, and riot police, and you know, like apart from the delay, and then like to be funneled a different direction away from where probably 95% of fans needed to go.
Which was utterly ridiculous, by the way, because I wanted to go that way, that they wouldn't let you go, because another great thing about the stadiums over there, they've basically built like mini shopping centres into the stadiums. Like we went out to the ground early before the game Saturday, and we weren't sure whether to be, you know, many pubs or that around. So brought a few cans, but didn't need to, because literally you walk in and you had Burger King, you had a kebab shop, pizza shop, loads of different beauty salons, cinema. There was a Lidl in the sporting stadium. Yeah. There was actually a pub in the stadium as well. There was everything you needed there. So we wanted to go back towards that food court after to get a munch before we went back to the hotel. And the police were like, no, you can't go this way. And I just said to myself, just stand here for like 5 minutes and eventually they're just going to let us go. And they did. So what was the difference in 5 minutes? You know, it's just...
But particularly with no segregation before the game.
Yeah, Portuguese fans come up shaking my hand, welcome to Portugal and everything. No issues, nothing.
But like a totally different... Now, as you said, it's probably protocol.
Yeah.
And I'd say, you know, the police are probably like, you know, we need a few hundred grand from the FA to fund bullshit within the police. So like just moving public money around the place. Yeah, just as you said, tooled up to the heavens, and then they sent us around the block to go back to where we were, where we entered the stadium, like campus area thing. Totally unnecessary. But yeah, like no one was alerted to that. You know, like I do be awful hard on, you know, the FBI. Like, okay, we're being kept back half an hour, but also you can't walk the way you came in. You know, you're being sent miles away. No, it wasn't miles away, but like it still delayed the whole thing for absolutely no reason. But, you know, I would have expected the FAI to let the fans know about that. I thought we had a support liaison officer, but I don't know what that person does. But look.
We'll get into the game itself.
Yeah. The netting and stuff like that, though, didn't cost me a thought, really. I think me and you said it, no real bad views in the place. Not that we were behind the goal. Could see everything we wanted to see, like got a good view of the penalty and all of that. So I was happy enough. One issue, like no replays on the screen, which is probably a feature of the stadium more than anything else. But other than that, I thought it was a nice enough stadium, and that was grand. But yeah, on the game itself, definitely a few questions have to be asked about the squad just to begin with. The players coming straight into the starting 11 who weren't in the squad last time is strange. I would have to ask questions about obviously Heimer, but like John O'Shea and Paddy McCarthy, like particularly John O'Shea, who played with Seamus Coleman for what isn't the entirety of his Ireland career almost. How was that not clarified to some degree that, okay, we need Seamus Coleman here? By his interview after the game, I think he did an interview at Off the Ball, which I thought was quite good.
Yeah, I see that.
He actually mentioned that though he was a bit miffed that he wasn't included in the squad. He hasn't played any more football since that time. Maybe 5 minutes as a substitute in the Premier League or some other competition in the UK. Suddenly now he's ready to start against Portugal. Is that what we're being told here? What's the logic in that decision? It just goes to show.
I just want to clarify there that Coleman has to be in the team. That is the right decision. He should have been there all along, or should have been in the squads anyway, certainly. And his influence around the place should always be there. You're not saying that was the wrong decision to play him the other night?
No, I'm not saying it's the wrong decision.
We need to,
there's been quite a bit of talk about it, like, you know, positive performance. Why couldn't we play like that against Armenia? Like, everything is going back to Armenia in Yerevan. That's what, you know, we're all damaged deeply by that game. So I still think it's relevant that we can still, you know, I why was Seamus Coleman not in that squad? Why was Jason Malumbi not in that squad?
Malumbi made a huge difference the other night. A bit of bite in the midfield, which we were so badly lacking in the previous games.
What's been like? I know it's done and all of that. It's a six game. It's a knockout, almost a knockout competition. It's six games that you have to do this job. If you're missing out on one of them, that still needs to be found out about what exactly happened. It's unacceptable. I remember Longford GA, senior GA team played Kerry in the championship, I think in like 2008 or something like that, and get them a very good game. But there was actually a meeting at the county board level about why Longford team captain picked to play against the wind in the first half. Because Longford played very well in that game and nearly knocked Kerry out of the championship, and Kerry would have to go through the back door, which would have been a monumental achievement for a county like Longford. But I'm saying, like, there was still a post-mortem done. Why was that decision made? And you'd have to look back at these decisions, Malumbi, Seamus Coleman, why those decisions were made in the first one. Like, particularly, I'm obviously still very harmed by the Armenia game, but I still don't understand why the friendlies were picked in light of the Hungary and Armenia game, back in June. Everything was with Hungary and Armenia in mind.
Yeah.
So if they got the squad wrong, what were they doing for the previous 6 months? What was going on? We haven't had an answer to that question. And it's really, really, really not good enough. And, we're looking at, Cape Verde have qualified for the World Cup there, and fair play to all of them. A very small country, but it can be done. But we're obviously in a different region and playing different levels of teams. But looking we still have to prepare. Yeah, but my point is we have to prepare properly. And I can't understand the oversight of Seamus Coleman not getting into that squad in September. It's absolutely baffling to me. On the game itself...
By the way, I wouldn't have took him off the other night either. That made no sense to me.
No, not me. Not that I don't think it would have changed.
The only way Coleman was coming off that pitch...
If he had a leg broke.
Yeah, and even then he'd probably need convincing.
Yeah, exactly. I was quite pleased with the overall performance. I do want to make one negative point. It's exactly what I expected. You can go back, and Seamus Coleman also referenced that in his interview, which I thought was one of the better interviews I've seen, where Ireland always bring their game up against the bigger nations to defend well, to, backs against the wall, bodies on the line, bursting their gut to, make the yards, make the challenges, do the best that they can. And
well, to borrow a recent quote from Michael Owen, and, he doesn't have many good quotes, but I thought this was a very good one. He was talking to Rio Ferdinand about the art of attacking and defending, and Michael Owen said, attacking is far harder than defending. And Rio obviously wasn't buying that as a defender, and he was like, explain that to me. And Michael Owen was like, well, we're sitting in this beautiful mansion of a house. Yeah. If you asked me to build this, I could be here for 3 months, 6 months, 3 years, whatever. I couldn't build this. If you gave me a few weeks to knock it down, I could.
Exactly.
It's easier to sit in and defend with no real... intent of hurting the opposition than it is to go out and obviously try and play.
Correct.
Yes, we were incredibly well organized. We worked our socks off, which again begs the question, why wasn't that same level of effort there in Armenia? And correct. I still want, I hear this shite all the time, the jersey's too heavy and the pressure and blah, blah, blah. The effort was not there in Armenia. You can come up with whatever excuse you want. The effort was not there on the night. The effort was there the other night. My concern now would be, and again, we'll not spend too long on this because we're only less than 24 hours away now from kickoff as we speak. My concern would be a game tomorrow. We have to be on the front foot. We have to create chances. That between the Hungary game, the Armenia game, and now the Portugal game, we have created very, very little clear-cut chances in three matches.
Yeah. The chances have been few and far between. There's no doubt about that. And obviously, I would discount the Portugal game to a certain extent. Not saying that we could just go there and try and get a point. But I think it was the correct method to...
Because, 100%, yeah.
But not only because of Portugal, but because of the result in Armenia. We needed to, steal a point away from home against Portugal. That would have been huge. And it would have definitely put a bit of a shine on the table, as bad as it looks right now. I do, and there's been a lot of talk, and like, oh, you know, this pub talk, I don't believe the players didn't, yeah, weren't trying. There wasn't the same, next or near the same level of commitment or desire in Armenia, by my eye, and obviously being at both games, I think I've slightly higher, you know, exposure to what exactly happened on the field. I think there was a lot of good things about the Irish performance on Saturday night, and something that they have to build on. What, just on the point you mentioned there, we have to go at Armenia tomorrow evening in the Aviva. Yes, we do, but what we weren't in Yerevan was hard to beat.
Mm.
We were played through as if we were statues. The midfield was non-existent. The defence was non-existent. If Quevin Kelleher wasn't there, it could have been an absolute bloodbath.
Yeah.
So this idea that, like, we can now, like, and I'm not saying you're saying it, but like, we can't just go away from the idea, oh, you know, we don't need to be the, we can do away with this tough to beat mentality tomorrow night. We have to go at these lads. Yes, we have to go at these lads, but we have to do it by being tough to beat in the first place. It would be another embarrassment of a result, no matter what happens. If the referee takes the ball down and boots it into the net himself for Armenia, that is not an excuse. And just on the referee on Saturday night, he was desperate. Like, I'm surprised that Ronaldo, I know he didn't do a lot of movement on Saturday night, but like, I thought the ref was bending on his knees in front of him for the whole bloody game. It was an absolute joke. You know, another adult man. Now, I know there's a lot of adults, you know, even in the Irish fan base that would have been creaming themselves seeing Ronaldo in the flesh. But, you know, we're here to support Ireland and want Ireland to win.
Jizzy was desperate, the last thing about, wasn't he?
I don't think so. I think this idea.
He's desperate, Jesus.
No, not at all. I think
you're a bit of a Ronaldo fanboy.
No, I'm not a Ronaldo fanboy, but
I thought he was absolutely desperate. I thought he was horrendous.
I get it. Will you let me finish? Jesus Christ.
Terrible. He was awful.
Yeah. This idea, this like interesting narrative going around about Ronaldo. I think definitely after he quote unquote failed at United, which total bullshit.
Yeah, no, that's, I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Roy Keane was 100% right on that. He hit the post. He did miss the penalty, and it was a poor penalty. Great save by Quevin. I thought he was definitely something. I've seen him three times now, and he's never scored a goal in front of me, which is nice.
I've seen him three times as well, and he scored two in the one game, the friendly last year.
Oh, right, yeah. I wasn't at that one. I seen him in a Manchester derby against Ireland in the Aviva a few weeks later, and then the other night. But I think this idea, like, I don't know what people want from him. Like, he is one of the best finishers that the world has ever seen in the game. Mm. Let's be honest about it. We're on one hand praising the life out of Seamus Coleman, who's 37. Ronaldo's still scoring goals at international level regularly, all the time. He's still scoring goals. Like, we're, you know, he doesn't track back or whatever. It's total bullshit. Like, if you have a ringer up front, you play him. He is a ringer. This idea that I don't know what people are looking for him to do. It's probably the, you know, systemification of the football that people are creaming themselves over. Like, oh yeah, I love like 3,000 passes a game and we lose 1-0. You know, that type of stuff, maybe. I don't think he was desperate at all. He made some good link-up play, created some chances. Unfortunately, did miss a penalty for him. Great save by Quevin. But look, on the result itself, it was a heroic loss, which I'm not really mad about. It's tough to take, but definitely something that needs to be backed up tomorrow. I don't want to hear anything. If we, anything less than 3 points tomorrow in any manner is unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't bother turning up in November if they don't win tomorrow.
Oh, forget about it. But forget about it. Just ring FIFA, ring UEFA, boys. We're not doing it.
Right, yeah, we said we wouldn't spend long on it, but that was 20 minutes there of Ireland chat. But yeah, listeners do seem to enjoy our tales of our away trips, so hopefully they enjoyed that little segment.
Hopefully so, but look, hopefully we won't need an emergency pod later this week.
Oh, please God, yeah, I don't think we can do another one of those. Yeah, so from potential emergencies, Gary, to the complete opposite, a great situation for Dundalk. They're back in the big time. Well done to them. Congratulations to all our Lily Whites listeners back in the Premier Division.
Back in the Premier Division, fair play to them, was right. You know, super work throughout the season. Wasn't really surprised that they were going to win it from early on. But yeah, they did well, I suppose. Reaction is quite funny generally.
In what sense? What do you mean by that?
Well, like everybody's going on as if like this is, you know, the equivalent of Kerry winning the first division, like, and getting promoted to the Premier Division. Like, it's not that. Like, I don't think anybody on the planet was surprised to see that Dundalk were going to win it, really. You know, they've squad that they have, full-time team in the first division. Probably the largest budget in the first division, or top two anyway. It's not exactly a surprise to see Dundalk win it. Like, I know they still have to go and win it, but the reaction is hilarious. Like, it's like, oh, I can't believe this has happened. It's sensational. Oh my God.
Is that not more coming from a place though of where they were a year ago?
but that was put to the side before a ball was kicked when you saw the squad that was put together. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, owner makes a bags of it. In the previous owner, new lad comes in and solves the problem. You know what I mean? I think the previous owner has said in recent weeks that, like, that was never going to be the case, that the club was going to fold at 5 o'clock that day. Like, that was all just a ploy.
That was a
so, like,
point.
I know that very was the, you know. Yeah, but I'm just mean like, and I know you know, as fans still have to go through that and listen to that and be like, oh shit, what's going to happen? I'm not disputing that at all. But like, you know, the level of squad that they had in the first division, if you weren't winning it, there was something more, like that would be more surprising, let's be honest about it. I think Player Fit put up a picture, it's like some lad took a risk saying Dundalk champions in June and put it on the jersey. What? Like, it would have been a mess of epic proportions. Like, it would have been one of the biggest tog filling sessions in recent years to see if they managed to lose it from that point, you know.
They gave it a good goal during the run in, to be fair, didn't they?
Yeah, to a degree, but like, you know, it would have got down to the last day anyway. You know, that would have been the worst of going. Like, Cove weren't consistent enough either to bring it up. Like, Dundalk lost, what, 3 games all year?
And all away from home as well.
Like, was it? Yeah, so like, you know, come on, like, you know, it's I'd like if Longford Town won the region next year, like, you know, we'd probably need a 3-day bank holiday to get over it, because that'd actually be a surprise and a worthwhile reaction. But say, make no mistake, delighted for the fans to see the club back. It was obviously hairy enough last year; they got through it this season without much of a, you know, much of an issue. So yeah, fair play to them for that, and the real work starts now, I suppose.
I suppose we've kind of touched on it throughout the season, really. Me and you have given them no real chance of staying up next season, so I think what we'll do, we'll turn it over to Aidan Irvine first, and I am going to put that question to him. I don't think it's just us. I think a lot of people that have watched the first division this season don't expect Dundalk to have much of an impact back at that level next season, so I'm going to put that to Aidan. We'll hear what he has to say about winning the division, some of the celebrations over the weekend, and then we might come back to that point after this. So here's Aidan Irvine on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, I'm delighted to say we are joined by Dundalk FC vice-captain Aidan Irvine on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Aidan, great to see you. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Good week, good few nights, but it's good to get it done finally.
Yeah, your third promotion, your second First Division title. How does this compare, what you've achieved with Dundalk, to your promotions in the past with Longford and Galway?
I know people are saying stuff, but the fact that I was involved with what happened last year and then rebuilding it it's a special feeling. Look, I went into Galway halfway through the year, and I think there were a good few points ahead. So, as much as you want to feel part of it, you still don't feel like you influenced it as much as you did. Obviously, the Longford one was very special. It was just a pity it was in lockdown. But I haven't really looked back and compared them. I thought it was a very special week. This week, the whole week building up to it, the night itself, the next day there's something about the place that they know how to build up big games.
Yeah, we certainly saw that Friday. It looked an absolutely incredible atmosphere and a great crowd as well, which was brilliant to see. I suppose you touched on it there. Your first half a season with Dundalk last year, you went, 13, 14 games without winning in a Dundalk jersey. So again, to have that behind you and to go on and win the league this season, that must make it all the more special, the fact that you stuck with Dundalk after such a difficult few months there last year.
Yeah, look, it was mad. But there was always something about the place that you wanted to stay. Like, I know, ultimately, whatever went on, we weren't good enough as a group last year. And I think we need to emphasise that as well. Look, there can be stuff going off the pitch, but when you're on the pitch and you're not getting results, regardless, it's not good enough. But as a whole, like going up that day when we thought we were supposed to be playing Sligo and then being told, oh no, well, you might be playing, that was mad. And then the manager came in the day after the manager got the job. I met him and it was clear as day. I sort of had my mind made up already, but as soon as I sat down with him, it was a no-brainer.
And this season, has it been much calmer behind the scenes? Have you just been totally able to focus on football as opposed to worrying about, is this game going to be on next week? Are we going to be able to get a bus? That type of stuff.
Yeah, I think it has. In fairness to the people behind the scenes, they've, even before the season, they've really settled it down. I think the big thing last year was Scarpe, and even that with a points deduction and stuff, that would have been, it wouldn't have been ideal, but the people behind the scenes have really let us just concentrate on football, and it's a lot easier to do when you can just concentrate on football and you're not worrying about if you're going to get paid and that. But as soon as the owner came in last year, we all were promised we'd get paid, and we got paid. So credit to him and everybody that was helping him.
It wasn't the smoothest of run-ins. You hit a bit of choppy water in the last few games. Was it a nervous camp going into the game against Finn Harps on Friday?
Look, it was, I think every season is a bit like that. You always hit a blip. We didn't really hit a blip throughout the season. Other teams probably did, and then we hit it at the business end probably. Wasn't nervous because we know how we train, we know how we prepare and everything. It's just one of those things. You're not nervous, you're not antsy or anything before any game. It was just the way the games fell out and the way they fell, and it was just, We couldn't seem to take advantage of the chances we were given, but I think we were all pretty confident that eventually we'd be crowned champions, and we were on Friday, thankfully.
Yeah, and given the start that Dundalk had, 18 or 19 league games unbeaten, to winning the league with only two games remaining, you know, you'd expect it to be a lot more comfortable than that. So you've been pushed most of the way by Cove Ramblers. You have a lot of experience in this division in the past, as we touched on. Do you feel that it has been a strong division this year for a team like Dundalk to have such long unbeaten runs and still only wrap up the title with two games to spare? It would suggest that there has been a challenge there for you all the same.
Yeah, of course. And look, in fairness, they pushed us right to the limit. And it's a good league. It's a hard league to get out of. It's very physical. There's a lot of young players coming up now, even on our team, like Vinnie Leonard, Owen Kenny. Sean Keogh is obviously gone, Sean Spaith. There's a lot of young players breaking in and making a name for themselves. So it is a tough league, and in fairness to them, they pushed us right to the wire. But I still felt confident. I still felt we had more than enough. It's a great group that we have. It's a very together group. Obviously, there's times where results don't go too well and everything else, but you can sort of see, we could see during the week that we have enough and we know we have enough, and we never really panicked. And I think that's down to the staff as well. They kept a real calm head on things. And then Borgs, obviously, he's been around and he's done it and he's helped us. So look, we had a lot of experience and we used it at the right times, but obviously we would have liked to have done it quicker, but as long as it's done is the main thing, I suppose.
How important was that blend in the squad? You mentioned some of the great young players there that that have come through this season, but yourself is quite an experienced player now in the league. Daryl Horgan, Keith Ward still there. Peter Cherry, I suppose, still there as well. He's been there and done that. So there is a really good blend, and the manager himself, obviously, with huge playing experience.
Yeah, look, and we used it, and when you're in the moment and you're in the thick of it, you mightn't think that you're using it. But the young lads are fearless, like, and it's not just our side or anything. Like, in both divisions, like, young players these days, they don't care if they make a mistake or whatever, and they just keep going, and it's really impressive. Obviously, we've a great group of young players. But then you can see the likes of Horgs and the way he helps them and he influences them, and the manager and Wardy. Even Wardy's been brilliant around the place. So it's I suppose I've been the young lad for most places, and now that I'm sort of starting to go into that different role, it's exciting to see, and it's a good challenge. It's a different challenge, being one of the more experienced players. But I enjoyed it. It was a really enjoyable year, and I think we got it down to a tee.
Yeah. Anytime I've heard you speak this year, or even at the start of the year, you seem to speak very, very highly of the manager. What is it about Kieran Kilduff that has made him such a good leader of this group?
He's a great person. And you can see the people that he brought in with him as well. Like, Burnsy was in. Ken's brilliant. Burnsy was brilliant. Massey came in. He was brilliant. He can judge a person really well. And it's not just football. Like, tactically, he's very good, but I feel like he's managed me really well on a personal experience, and I can see the way he manages other players. And even the first conversation I had with him, he makes you feel 10 feet tall, and that's a real trait to have as a manager. He knows when to go through you, he knows when to manage you, and he's been brilliant, and I can't speak highly enough of him, and he knows that. I think everybody in the squad would say that about him.
They always say it's important to enjoy these moments and reflect and savour what you've achieved. But has there been any kind of conversations as a group already about next year and what you might like to try and do?
Of course, in-house there has been. But the last few weeks, it's been completely about winning the league. There's no point in looking ahead when you're still in this situation, and you mightn't get out of it because Cove are so strong. And Cove can put teams to the sword very easily, so there's no point in speaking about that. Obviously, you have your own little ambitions and your own little goals, and look, I think they'll be implemented and we'll have a good crack at it. But it was a tough year, physically, mentally, everything. It was just the place itself. When you're like, my mates came up there at the weekend and they didn't realise how intense it is to play, and everything when you're in it, it's intense, and you love it, but you can't take your eye off it, or you can't be planning about something when you're not there.
And look, I know you, you love to prove people wrong, and I'm sure you've probably heard a lot of the punditry and commentary that's out there that this Dundalk team haven't a hope of staying up next season. I'm sure you're really looking forward to trying proving those people wrong.
Did you not say that?
I did.
You don't know. Look, if I hope I'm wrong. If me or you could judge that, we'd be very rich men. But look, it's just about proving people wrong. Exactly, you don't know who's going to be there or what. We've a good manager, we've a good staff, we've a good club, and we need to build on it. But look, it's not going to be easy. The league's going from strength to strength each year. Even the first division is going from strength to strength, and there's real quality in the league now. And you need to be able to compete and compete with the demands. And it's a tough league. Look, what I want is I want to stay up, and everybody else wants to stay up and prove people wrong. So we're excited. It's a good challenge to have. It's an exciting challenge to have. And if that doesn't get you up for stuff, I don't know what will.
And do you feel there is a realism around the club that is going to be the challenge next season? Yeah, everyone thinks that Dundalk has been this massive club, which they obviously are, given their history and what they've achieved in the last decade or so. But you know, it's not going to be maybe straight away a push for Europe, a push for a title. Trying to re-establish yourself at that level has to be goal number one, surely.
I'd imagine that we'll be favourites to go down. Look, there's no entitlement to think that, oh, just because we got promoted, we'll stay up or anything. There's a good gap between the two leagues. Staying up, of course, when you get promoted at any team, the goal is to stay up and then you build off it. So that's, of course, that's that's the goal. But if anything else comes with it, we'll take it as well.
Mm. In saying that, though, I'm sure the experience of Friday night playing in that atmosphere and the scenes after the game and during the game and everything that went with it, it must be in the back of your mind too. I'd love to experience that again at the top end of the Premier Division or a really good cup run and the likes, to try and bring big nights like that to Oriel as often as possible.
Of course, that gave us a bit of a hunger for it, but it's not called to be done straight away. Look, I'm lucky enough where I'm with the club for another while, so that's my goal. But you need to stay in the Premier Division to have them, and it's great looking at that, and you need to have those sort of goals, but you need to take care of your bread and butter first, and staying in the Premier Division next year will definitely be that.
Good weekend of celebrations.
Too good, yeah.
how long will they continue?
Look, I came home for a few days now, and then we'll see what happens next weekend. But look, we'll enjoy it while we can.
Yeah, I've tripped down to Cove, I suppose. Nice way to wrap up the season.
Yeah, we still need to win it. Look, there's a game of football to be won, so we're not going down there to take our foot off the gas or anything. We're going down to represent ourselves as champions properly and win a game of football.
And I suppose the three head-to-heads this year, while they might have always been the most comprehensive wins in terms of the scoreline, I watched most of those games. I was at one of them in Oriel. You were very comfortable in those games, and I think we said a few times Cove didn't really lay a glove on you in those games, despite the fact they've pushed you all season. So I'd imagine it would be nice to end the season with a clean sweep over your nearest rivals.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I think we control those games very well, but we don't want to go down and have the league won and let them walk all over us or anything. Look, we want to win the game and prove why we were champions all year, that we were the best team in the division all year, and I think that's our goal. And I think the manager said that, and he's made it pretty clear to us that with a game of football to win, we'll go down and win it.
Look, I'm sure either way it'll be a very satisfactory bus journey home. Hey, once again, congratulations, well done, and thanks for speaking to us, and hopefully you can prove us wrong next season.
Legend, thank you.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Yeah, so look, he's keen to prove us wrong, as you'd expect, Gary, and we very much hope he does as well. But realistically, What do Dundalk need to do in the off season to give themselves a chance of avoiding what Cork are going through right now, I suppose?
Well, it's easier said than done. I think the biggest issue is the players, the players that they can attract. They'll probably have to do some work in the loan market as well. We saw Drogheda do quite well in recent years from that.
But we've also seen the flip side of that, particularly Dundalk. Cork and Dundalk under Stephen O'Donnell. A lot of loanees came in just when they were finding their groove. The summer window came and they were gone, and then they weren't able to replace them and they were relegated. So it's a dangerous game to play that loan market.
Well, it is, but they're going to have to take some risks. I think it's going to be difficult to add enough to the squad. Probably as the season, first part of the season goes on, you're approaching the window, it could be a case where you're making some rash decisions trying to get players in to pull you out of a fire. I think I know we haven't even finished off the season proper yet, but the work that they're going to have to do in trying to get players to come in January, get a pre-season into them with the squad, is going to be very difficult. But it's something that they're just going to have to really work very hard on. It's going to be very hard to set yourselves up in the Premier Division. Like we saw Galway, different animal financially, but did really well in the first season, making a bit of a dog's dinner of it in the second season, and Waterford the same. So it's hard to establish yourself in the Premier Division. It's cutthroat, and Dundalk are going to have to really be on fire next year. Like one thing, I was actually talking to someone out in Lisbon about that. Who's going to be the whipping boys in the Premier Division next season? Who's going to save someone else? who's just a tiny bit less bad next year.
It's a good point, because I think we'll be getting to it shortly, the FAI Cup semi-finals. That performance from Cork City, I know Pats have not had the best of seasons, but for Cork to do that while they're bottom of the Premier Division and going to go down, it shows how high the level now is in that division. It's going to be a complete different animal for Dundalk next season. But they know that, and I'm sure Kieran Gilduff already knows the areas he needs to improve. They're going to need to get a goalkeeper in there. They're going to have to probably get another centre forward in. It just hasn't happened for Dean Ebbe at all. There's plenty of areas that will need improvement, and they could lose some of those really talented young players they've got at the club as well. So it's going to be a massive, massive challenge in more ways than one for Kieran Gilduff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, he probably needs, I think he probably needs six starters, you know, to be brought in. Two centre backs, a couple of midfielders, and a couple of forward players.
And then what you need is a really good pre-season, lots of games, lots of time together, because you're trying to gel an entirely new squad. And again, that puts strains on the finances as well. So
you're going to have to probably bring in like higher level of player at larger money for a longer period of time. One thing.
And even I'm not sure in terms of their ability to house as many players as they used to be able to do, where they're going to be in that regard next season. I know they've got a couple of lads housed this season, but if you're going on there, but maybe the loan market in the UK, or, you know, even if you're bringing a lad on loan from Shamrock Rovers or somewhere, are they able to accommodate them? So it's going to be a huge, huge challenge for Dundalk next season. But again, look, they're fully aware of that, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Hopefully, you know, for Dundalk and their fans and the club, you know, that they need to start, like, the work starts now. It's not going to be a case of, like, I don't think Killer will have a minute to even process the fact that they won the division, really. I think the work needs to start immediately, identifying players within budget. Can they get a bit more budget to bring in, you know, a couple of players, you know, certain players that they like or whatever? I think it's going to be a very, very nervous time, I would say. Like, it's obviously great to be back in the Premier Division, and I remember you saying to me years ago about Longford Town going into the Premier Division and didn't make that many changes to the squad, but at least we were seeing the best teams in the country and better stadiums around the place, so that was fun. But I think for Dundalk that want to maybe stay in the Premier Division, they're going to have to really change the composition of the squad, because I just don't think they'll be next really able for it with the current players that they have.
We might try and get Kieran on in the next few weeks and have a chat with him, because I think you're right. He strikes me as the type of character. I'd imagine he did feck all celebrating, really. I'd say it's business head on and already thinking about next season.
And fair play to him, though. Like, he did lead a team to a title.
Yeah, in his first full season as a League of Ireland men's manager. Second league title, let's not forget, as a manager.
Yep, so hats off to him.
Yeah, no, very impressed with how he's carried himself. Right, just other talking points from the First Division before I want to talk about those FAI Cup semi-finals, but I know you held the fort and did a great job on the commentary of Longford against Cove. You weren't all that impressed with Cove?
I wasn't, I wasn't. I thought Hakkinen was dire throughout the whole game. It was absolutely, any ball that came near him was a firefighting job. It was crazy. Letting stuff bounce and stuff like that. Like, he wasn't, I think he found it hard as the game went on to, like, pull himself into, like, a few, you know, convincing clearances or headers or anything like that. He was quite poor. And I think that kind of really disheveled the back line for Cove. But I didn't see the fight or desire or, you know, the we have a chance to bring it down here to the last day. I wasn't overly impressed with how they attacked the game. Wayne Groves mentioned in the interview after that, like, you know, sometimes we win because the other teams were poor. I don't think Cove that bad on the night. It just Longford Town were way better and way more desire. From a Longford perspective, it was always going to be a monumental task to get into the playoffs from the current position they were in. But they were going to give it every... It wasn't going to be because they let themselves down in the last few weeks. Do you know what I mean? It was Treaty and Wexford getting the points that they needed to put Longford away from it. Whereas Cove had an opportunity and still could have came back in the game, but I thought they were quite flat. And I thought Longford were just sensational. Some really good challenges. Good, you know, desire, good commitment. Definitely giving you something as a Longford fan, giving you a lot of positivities, and hopefully Wayne Groves can keep the players that he'd like to keep and build on for next season rather than, you know, another rebuilding job.
Yeah. So the race for the playoffs is down to two now going into the last day of the regular season. Treaty United in fifth, 1 point clear of Wexford, and they play each other on the last day. I know, well, look, we'll be getting to the predictions league part of the show later, so we might leave that for that. But I think they were probably the main talking points from the first division. The FAI Cup semi-finals, looked at the Shamrock Rovers one, obviously went the way most people expected, but the non-red card decision, that was the talking point after the game, which is remarkable, really, because it was such a one-sided contest. I don't think even the most hardened Kerry fan would say that the red card probably wouldn't have made a whole pile of difference, but it's just absolutely incredible that the referee didn't send Graham Burke off.
Yeah, I thought... Colin Healy made that comment himself in the interview after, saying, look, it probably wouldn't have changed the game, but he still should have been sent off.
Yeah.
There was no question about that. And, you know, the bullshit line from Bradley, you know, I don't even think the challenge was a yellow card, to be quite honest. But the reaction from Burke was completely wrong and he should have been sent off. But then again, there you go. As I said to you, or I do say many times, like, the Rovers back line and Rovers in general probably owe 50 red cards to the league over the last few years. Bailed out by the ref on numerous occasions. And multiple refs as well. But look, that's just the way it is. Not a surprise of a result either. Fair play to Kerry, but the clash on true. I did think it was funny, the line from Bradley. I think it was after the game in Europe, in Prague. Oh, you know, we had to think about the FAI Cup final and semi-final, rather.
Yeah, that was
total bullshit. Total bullshit. Like, how has he not been called out on this? Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, what are you talking about? Like, oh yes, Stephen, yes, you're completely right. Thank you so much. Absolute bollocks. Like, come on, lads. Absolute bollocks.
By the way, it's a bit of a messy show tonight because there's a couple of games going on as well. That's why we're kind of not drilling deep into every game like we normally do. We're kind of just picking up on key points that we've missed over the last week while we've been away. But as it stands, Cork City are losing 1-0 to Shelburne. So I think by my quick maths, which is probably wrong, I think that means that Cork will be relegated tonight. They're 11 points adrift with 3 games to play, so yeah, that would be right, and that would move Shelburne
up to third.
Yeah, so that could be quite significant, but a bit of time to go in that game yet. And in the first division, probably not as significant. Finn Harps 0, Kerry FC 1. But I suppose just to wrap it up on Kerry, the crowd they brought up there, it goes to show that the potential within the club is most certainly there.
Absolutely. Lots of backing, lots of support from around the area. And of course, look, it's a marquee fixture for them in their short history. So obviously it's going to be well attended, but I thought they acquitted themselves well enough. I know it was a strong result from Shamrock Rovers, but they do that to plenty of teams all the time.
Yeah, look, I think the other semi-final is probably the one people wanted to hear about and talk about.
Yeah.
Absolutely remarkable stuff. Great performance from Cork City, but an absolutely shocking performance from Pat. I think we should start with Cork, try and keep the positives here. Sean rolling back the years, but you'd have to look at all 3 goals, the keeper's very useless. Poor. No, I'm not putting it on one man at all. No. Not trying to do that. Now, we will talk more about Pats in a second and where it went wrong for them. But let's start with Maguire. He really rolled back the years with a brilliant display.
He certainly did. Like, it's hard to even remember that now. I know it was only 10 days ago, but we've seen a lot of football in between now and then. But yeah, I think like it shows his class. You know, he cuts it back in on himself to give himself the opportunity to score. Sets the game up really well. And I thought, oh, we're in for something here now. This is going to be a banger
of
a game.
Yeah.
But it never really materialized from Pats. They never really stepped up, never really got going. I thought they were...
It was this exact same Pats performance that I watched against Sligo only a couple of weeks ago. I've watched Pats a few times live on TV now in the space of a few weeks, and I think I said this on the last pod we did before we went away, but it's just like endless amounts of possession and no cutting edge, nothing to it. It's just...
Yeah, particularly for Pats who are going down to a team that are like down, almost completely down and out. You know, the league is almost over. But this is the one thing that they have left in their season, really. You know you're going to get a game out of them regardless. And Pats never really, you know, stood up to that. They let the game, you know, just float by them. And then the quick goals from McLaughlin in the second half, you know, just playing them out.
Yeah.
And I was really, I was surprised, to be quite honest. I just thought, right, well, this is like the Pats that like we've been, or their fans, and even myself, seen them a few times this season. You know, they just have, they're just not at it. I've been harsh on Forrester, for example, but like, you know, where's he? You know, you're
literally, where was he? Because I was watching the game, as I said, on the TV, and I got the kickoff time wrong. I was a couple of minutes late turning it on. Now, lucky I got it on just before the Maguire goal. So I missed maybe the first 6 or 7 minutes.
Aye.
And I think I text you and I said, Chris Forrester's name has just been mentioned for the first time since I turned it on. And it was about 31 minutes in when I heard his name first mentioned. I thought I thought he wasn't on the pitch. I thought he was injured until I heard his name mentioned.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That really struck me.
Yeah, but that's bullshit. Like, that's complete bullshit. And, you know, I think he scored a banger in, I guess, a friendly the other night or something like that. I think on St. Pat's socials on Friday or something. Wow, who cares? Who gives a shite, man? I know I'm picking him out, but like, he's the captain, the senior player, you know, this and that and the other, one of the best, most technically gifted, blah, blah, blah. That's fine. Go out and play, you know, futsal or something like that. You know, the club need to win stuff and get to finals and get here, get to places, and they're not doing that. I know I'm just picking him out. I thought Anang was absolutely shite. Jesus. Absolutely desperate. And, you know, you're in a semi-final. You know, how is this not a thing? How are you not turning up for this? I don't know if it's arrogance. Like, I'm just looking at a couple of stats here on the game. You know, Cork at 33% possession. 2 corner kicks to Pat's 11. What? You know, a stat man's wet dream. You know, a lad with a laptop and an iPad going around, oh, we dominated this. I don't mind the score. Like, that's bullshit. And that's the same yarn we've been seeing from Stephen Kenny for a while. Don't know, you know, something needs to give, because I'm not saying that he needs to go, but like, there needs to be some type of brain transplant in St. Pat's, because there's gonna have unacceptable.
Yeah, there's gonna have to be a serious gutting of that dressing room, isn't there?
I don't know whether a gutting is required.
I think it has to be. I think it's how many we've had this discussion before. How many managers have been in there now, and the same comments keep emerging from the Pat's fans themselves, that every time they go on a bad run, the players are gutless, they're spineless, they need to go. Too many bad characters around the place, too many soft boys around the place. Let's experiment that. So let's put that to the test. Get rid of these players, and we'll soon find out. The truth will be in the pudding.
Yeah, but we already, well, we have a bit of truth here already, right?
There's definitely some players I'm looking at there. I couldn't have them near the place at the minute.
Like,
it's a big call. I don't know how much Forrester's bringing to that team anymore.
Yeah, same. Well, I've been saying this how long?
Well, Anang is 0.1 anyway. He has to go.
Right. I'd have definite reservation. I think Forrester is, you know, time to send him out to pasture. I probably don't see enough from Keane Levy.
We spoke about him on a recent pod. Like, he's such a good carrier of the ball, but his decision making really needs to improve.
Yeah, exactly. But like, this is a team that isn't, like, you know, the expectation from Pats is to be challenging for stuff, right? And maybe we would believe that on paper they have enough quality in the squad to do so. But they're not next or near. This has been a disaster of a season. And the players that they have, you know, you miss Amelia, other players like Levy or Power, they're not getting enough out of them. Like, to be losing 3-0 in the FAI Cup semi-final is totally unacceptable, really. Like, they were absolutely stuffed.
Yeah.
But the idea that, like, and it's all about, and I keep saying it, God, I'm going to be saying this, it's going to be on my grave. Possession, passing, no intensity will get you nowhere. That's the point.
Yeah, that's exactly
it. Doesn't matter. There's no intensity in this team. And no velocity, no tempo, no nothing. Stuff is going to happen, but we're not going to do anything to make it happen. And unless they get rid of this mentality, I don't give a shit. If Jose Mourinho tells me that I'm wrong, I'll still tell him back that he's actually wrong. I don't give a shit who says this. If there's no intensity, and we used to talk about it for years under Stephen Kenny's Ireland.
Yeah.
That, you know, passing, right, and if you're 1-0 down, oh shit, we've after playing the game with no intensity. And now we have to bring all this intensity, try and pull the game out of the fire. It's not possible. It's not possible. And they went down 1-0, and I just expected by default, right, Pat's going to have to come out here and going to try and rescue this and maybe get a goal before halftime, set it up and for the second half. Never occurred. Never occurred. And it's just not good enough.
Mulroney, another one who's all nothing.
No, Mulroney, another one. Yeah. I think it's bollocks. You know, and your mate there, Brian Gartlett, I don't know why he has brought to it either. Something has to give here. Like this moping around, passing around, leaping around the place, doing nothing with the ball. Where has that brought them to this season? Absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, it's been really poor.
Yeah, it has, But this was, like, is this a surprise that
with that Shelburne result, as it is at the minute, Shell's beating Cork, Pats are down to sixth in the table now. I know that they're only 4 points outside fourth. They're not going to get Europe, are they?
No.
No.
No, they don't deserve it. They were shite in Europe as well. You know, I think a bit of cop on here, like, I'd say, you know, this is a, you know, 32 games gone, 12 wins, 10 draws, 10 losses. They're exactly where they're supposed to be. Mm. In the table.
Even if they had won the cup this season, that was only kind of salvaging the season in my eyes, with the squad they had at the start and the expectations to win the cup and finish down the league table and not make much of a dent in Europe.
The thing about the cup thing is, right, rescuing the season, Cork are now in the final, they're getting relegated. The cup is only you know that type.
It's important this year because of the second round Europa League. If you win it,
you have to get there. You have to get there. I don't care what. Europe is Europe. That's something for next year. Do you know what I mean? Like, Bows are praying now that Shamrock Rovers win the cup. But, you know, if it stays like this for the next few games, Bows in fourth, they're praying that Shamrock Rovers beat the piss out of Cork City, which is likely to occur. And that'll put Bows in fourth position, which is now a cup spot or a Europe spot. Excuse me. You know, like, Pats don't really need Europe to be worrying about. Like, they have enough on their own plate. You know, it's probably a good thing that they're not next or near Europe, to be honest.
I suppose just to bring it back to the league, Gary, very quickly. Rovers are making a bit of heavy lifting of wrapping up the title. Look, it's going to happen. Just a matter of when, as opposed to if. But they're probably disappointed they haven't wrapped it up a little bit quicker.
Yeah, look, there's 9 points in it. Derry, 3 games left. Another point will do it. And who are Rovers playing next? They're playing Pats on Friday. Ah, maybe Pats will do Derry a favour, but unlikely to be the case. They are making a bit of heavy lifting of it. Really good finish from McEnroy the other night. But yeah, I think it's only delaying the inevitable, really.
I suppose the other big story while we were away was... Waterford's victory.
Oh, yeah, beating Drogheda. Yeah, that was a surprise. Yeah, right?
Brings them level on points with Sligo again all of a sudden.
Yeah, I know Galway have a game in hand. They're at home to Bowes on Friday. That's not a handy one for them at all. Like the only team, like the Bet Cork a few weeks ago, well, that's the only shining light that they've had in a good while. And that's not a gimme by any stretch. Like, I think Galway would be doing their level best not to lose that game. I wouldn't be. Would you have much concern with Waterford now? Do you think they've? It seems like, I know it's one game, one win for Matt Lawler that went in there recently. Would you have a confidence in them escaping the playoff spot?
Need to have a look at the running again here quickly just to refresh my own brain. But Waterford at home to Derry, I wouldn't be at all surprised Derry fill the togs there.
Oh, fill them absolutely full. They'll have them filled driving through Longford on the way down.
If that happens, then Galway really have to beat Bowes. And then it goes down to the penultimate round of games. You've got Waterford away to Pats. Could get something there, potentially, the way Pats are playing. Galway at home to Drogheda. That's absolutely huge.
That's a sticky one, yeah.
You get the feeling that if Galway are going to get out of it, they're probably going to have to win on the last day of the season in the RSC.
I'd be struggling with that one, to be honest. I don't think that Galway have enough there at all.
I think just for whichever team ends up in that ninth, I think it's just crucial to try and get a couple of results on the board before that playoff game. Even if they're picking up points here and there, and it's not enough, if they can just have some bit of form behind them going into the playoffs.
Yeah, I still wouldn't have much confidence. So you're saying that Galway are done?
No, not at all. I just think that they're probably going to need to win the RSC, and I'd be like you, I'm not sure how capable of that they are.
No, the one thing is that game that Galway have, the game that's missing there against Rovers. I'd say Rovers are on the beach.
All right, yeah, I forgot about that.
That game is on a Wednesday in the middle of the week. What do you,
yeah, that could be. Be important. Where is that?
Tala.
Yeah, they're probably still going to have to win on the last day of the season.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. The final game round of games are on a Saturday, aren't they?
Saturday at 4:30. Yeah, I wouldn't be a big fan of that now, I have to say.
What was that in aid of? Do you remember?
TV coverage, because is that Ireland New Zealand that weekend or something?
Oh, yes, a test match.
Yes.
Oh, very good. Yeah. We all pretend that it's not a friendly. Okay, great.
But since the last pod as well, we had the European games. Shells picked up a point against Hacken. It wasn't exactly a classic, it has to be said, but a point on the board, which is good for the bank and for the coefficient and for their chances of getting through the league phase. Rovers, I suppose, as we expected, were well beaten in Prague. Some of those old defensive issues re-emerging for Rovers in that game. But just on Shells, I don't know, did you watch much of it?
No, I didn't. I can't remember. I don't even remember the goal, to be quite honest, for Shamrock Rovers. I did actually watch a bit of Shells. Did they miss out on an opportunity to gather a few points?
Nah, I think a draw was fair. They started the game really well. Yeah. Came out with a great intensity, and then it fizzled out very quickly.
It did. You're reminding me. But look, I think it's going to be difficult. I think Rovers will have to rely on the last few games. Keep it in touch. I think I did read somewhere that the... Was it 7 or 8 points is the line to get into the next phase?
Yeah, well, if we're going by last year, that'd be about right, yeah.
So hopefully they can...
They're home to Selgi is their next one, Rovers, so that's huge for them.
And who are...
And Shelburne's next fixture in that is they're away in North Macedonia. Pick up another point there potentially. I don't really know a whole pile about that team, but
yeah, look, just, I think just chipping away and not getting stuffed is important.
Like, yeah, and then they're a home to Drita after that, and then they're away to Alkmaar. So and they have the Palace game then. So you'd want to have a couple of points on the board going into that Alkmaar game.
Yeah, exactly, because you're not going to get that now the next two, let's say. So yeah, you just want to keep it alive, pick up as many points as you can. But look, it's the first go of it. How about, you know?
Yeah, if they pick up a few points and a few bits of prize money along the way, sure.
How bad is it? Yeah,
and if they get back into Europe again for next season, then,
well, that's obviously key.
Yeah,
that's the key one. Yeah.
Right. I suppose one of the other big talking points while we were off was the very positive news that the government is finally investing some money into League of Ireland academies.
Yeah, absolutely. Was a welcome announcement, no doubt about it. Probably a bit less money than what was, well, I know it was less than what was asked for, but in the context of the budget, I don't want to talk about the budget either, but probably not a huge amount. But I suppose, you know, years and years of, you know, for a lot of people, giving money to the League of Ireland in any way, shape or form is probably, you'd be quicker burning it. But I think obviously the league and the FAI have matured in recent years, the league more so. And show that they can be good stewards of that money and, you know, to see a return on investment. Obviously, that'll be very hard to quantify over the next few years. And that'll be difficult, but that'll be down to the FAI to tell that story. That's what they're there for. Get the money in the first place and then, you know, go to the politician, whoever it'll be, as Minister for Sport, to go, right, this is what we've returned. This is the story that we've been able to produce. I do want to query, though, like, you know, there's 25 or 6 clubs getting money for academies and stuff like that. Sounds like a lot of clubs. Do we have enough people? Like, do we actually have enough human beings at the right, you know, with the natural ability to play at the top level? Do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, you're thinking maybe a kind of few super academies might be.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm not saying super academies, but also, you know, let's say...
No, but I think that is the kind of long-term idea, isn't it? That a bit like England, you have your tier one, tier two clubs, tier three.
Yeah.
But that's eventually, you know, the clubs that produce the numbers, as you said, in whatever way they quantify success, are going to get a bigger slice of the pie, and that's where the top players in the country will undoubtedly go.
Yeah. But, like, even in the short to medium term, like... you know, we'll say, just for example, I don't know, Cork and Cove, close in proximity to one another, it out, competing academies, no one really doing the ultimate job with the money that they've received, because they're splitting it up, doing, you know, everybody's splitting up the job when maybe a consolidation might be in place. And that'll go for maybe other regions as well. You know, like, do we need 5 massive academies in Dublin? Probably not. Do we need Longford and Athlone to have their own academy? Probably not. So
yeah, no, fair point.
Maybe there could be a bit of consolidation there, that, you know, that we can concentrate the best of that we can offer to the right number of lads and ladies in their location, but maybe not. Maybe drive 20 minutes down the road instead of into town. That's something. I know we're very, very early days. It's great. It is a feather in the cap for the FAI, I think, even though they are making a bags of it in other departments at the moment, particularly with the government there a few weeks ago. But I think it does show that they have turned a corner in the eyes of the government, which I think is important, to show that they're good stewards of the finances that they receive. But I think it's only a starting point, and there's other... You know, the conversation around facilities has kind of just disappeared. I feel, you know, Longford Town managed to build the wall, which is great to see. And there was a lot of support, but not very much government support.
A 100% record since the wall was built, I will have you know as well.
Absolutely, yeah. We have Ethan tracking that stat. Fair play to him. But, you know, facilities have gone to the side. Like, I saw a tweet there today, which is one of my favourite things on Twitter, is, you know, abusing the Oriel Park in general. But, like, you know, nothing has been done to the stadium in the interim period since, you know, the last year. Like, that away end has gotten actually worse, if possible. You know, I think maybe UNICEF should maybe throw their eye over that, because it is a disgrace. But that kind of conversation has kind of just disappeared, which is interesting. What's the next step? What's the next thing to get funded? But it is a very welcome funding announcement from the government, and also a signal that, you know, maybe we've turned a corner a bit.
Yeah, please God. Right, let's get to the predictions league. Now, as I said, I'm literally only a couple of hours off the plane, so I didn't have time to really contact anyone to play this week. Last week we had, a couple of weeks ago when we last did a pod, it was Jim Fitzgerald from Waterford, and he only brought up 4 points, but that 4 points brings the listeners' tally for the season up to 200 points. So they're still top of the tree. You put 6 points on the board and I put 5 on the board. So you were the top player in the most recent episode. So
reeling them in.
You're on 183. I'm on 178. So you've got 17 points to find on the listeners, and you're running out of time. So you really need a good week this week. So as I said, no time to put out a tweet this week and look for listeners. So I just turned to the person sitting next to me. That happened to be Kira. So she's playing this week for listeners. And she put great thought into these, I have to say. I rang her there just before we started. She's downstairs watching TV while I do this. And I was just like, shout the predictions there. And she was on the phone a good 5 or 6 minutes thinking about it. So she's put good effort in here for the listeners. Right, Waterford against Derry. She's going for a 1-0 win to Derry City here. As we said earlier, this is the sort of game we could see Derry making a bags of it.
Yeah. Well, last season, wasn't that the one that they were bailed out when the keeper threw the ball into their own net? Wasn't that it?
Well, that's happened to the Waterford keeper recently. But I can't really... Yeah, I think you could be right.
Yeah, bailed them out and kept their attempt at the Premier title going. I'm going to say... I feel Waterford here. I'm going to go 1-0 to Waterford.
You're going 1-0 to Waterford?
Yeah.
Would you believe Kira had actually gone 1-0 Waterford and then changed her mind?
Ooh.
So there could be something there. Is Michael Duffy going to bail Derry out here?
I was just thinking of him.
I go 2-1 Derry, but I have no great faith in it.
Okay.
Drogs against Cork. This is a huge game for Drogheda. Cork really, well, if I'll check the score again here while we're talking. Yeah, they're cooked. They're gone. Drogheda losing a bit of momentum. They really need a win here to keep their hopes alive of Europe.
They certainly do.
I mean, Bowes has to go to Galway. I know you'd fancy Bowes to get something out of it. But it's the sort of game Galway could win 1-0. And if Drogheda win here, they're right back in the mix.
I'm going to go 2-1 to Drogheda. I think they had a little bit of time off there. I'm going to, you know, I think they'll have taking a moment, taking a beat. As you said, they've gone a bit wobbly the last few weeks. Good result though, like with beating Shells. Good result at home to Derry as well. But that loss against Waterford is obviously a bit of a blot. So yeah. I think they're going to rectify that though. 2-1-2.
They're usually good at rectifying things after a poor result. But you know what? I think this could be the end of the road for the European dream.
Mm-hmm.
Going to go 2-1 to Cork. Players fighting for cup final positions now.
2-1 to Cork?
Yeah.
In Sullivan and Lamb Park, is it?
I know, yeah.
Okay.
It's a strange one, but I'm going that way. I'm getting desperate now with this season coming to an end. Shells against Sligo, this is a tough enough one to call. It's a huge game for both teams, really. I think I'd probably fancy Shells. They've been fairly professional since that defeat against Drogheda. They've responded quite well.
Yeah, they have. They're on a decent run, to be quite honest. away draw against Derry in the middle about a month ago, nearly now, Ginny Mac. But then there's a couple of other good results. And obviously, the one in Tala on Friday was a banger for them. I'm going to say 2-1 to Shells.
Going exactly the same. And Kira's going 1-0 to Shells there. Pats against Rovers. This is the night the title is won.
Yeah. I'm not seeing nothing in Pats, really. And we've just hammered them there.
Do they have it within themselves to raise themselves here for the visit of Rovers?
To be honest, like, they weren't able to get into a cup final against the bottom team of the league.
Yeah.
Why would they raise it now?
Yeah. 2-1 Rovers.
Yeah, no evidence of that. 2-1 to... I'm going to go 1-0 to Rovers, actually.
1-0 to Rovers, yeah. That's probably a good idea, because Kira's going 2-1 Rovers as well. Galway against Bowes. Good win for Bowes in the friendly on Saturday.
I don't see anything really in Galway, to be honest. I'm going to go 2-1 to Bowes.
Going to follow you. Kira going 0-0. Cove against Dundalk. We heard from Aidan Durbin they want to finish the season with a flourish, despite having the title already won. Could be sporting a few hangovers as they make their way down to Comans Park. Cove haven't laid a glove on Dundalk in any of the three meetings. There's nothing.
And that was obviously, you know, that was key, really.
Yeah, I said that in the interview there. Yeah, that was key. Go on, you go here. You go first here.
I don't see, like, I think the beach part for Dundalk will be an issue.
A huge Dundalk crowd going down to this, though.
I'm going to go for a 1-0 win to Dundalk.
1-0 win to Dundalk. Okay, that's interesting. Kira's going 3-1 to Dundalk. Yeah, I'll go 3-2 to Dundalk, bit of a kind of last day shootout type thing. Bray against Kerry?
Like, I suppose, you know...
Bray have been woeful ever since they knew the playoffs were a done deal, haven't they?
Yeah, they've been shite. Absolute shite. And taking beatings as well.
Yeah, and I think that's really, really going to harm them in terms of the playoff. They've completely ceded all momentum that they had.
Yeah, they have. For example, Bray are playing Kerry at home. UCD are away to Hearts. Like, if UCD win, could they sneak into third spot? I don't know, it won't make any difference, but it will make a difference to the
Home away advantage. I see Bray dropping points here.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a 0-0 draw.
Okay, I'm going 1-1, and so is Kira. Wexford against Treaty, the playoff shootout.
Ooh. Is Mikey Rowe back for this? That's a hard question.
Suspension list isn't out yet. I don't know. You went down to the Markets Field, didn't you?
Uh-huh, I did.
What did you make?
I didn't see it on there.
No, I didn't make it. What did you make of Treaty?
To be honest with you, when I looked at that game, I actually thought they weren't going to pick up another point in the season. To be honest, I know they rectified that on Friday, but I thought they were dire against Longford. Just missing that something that you need to be, like, you know, getting into these positions. But look, they did what they needed to do on Friday, beating Bray, keeps them into that position. But yeah, I'm going to say struggling with this one. You know, a draw will do them. So I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
I'm going to go 2-0 to Wexford. I think they've got good at this in the last few seasons, timing the run in well and getting into those playoff places. Now, they've left it very late this year, but I think Treaty have been on the slide for a long time. They've kind of been hanging into that fifth spot for a long time. And Wexford have picked up a bit of momentum as the season has gone on. I know last weekend didn't go to plan for them, but I think Wexford will get the job done here. So I'm going to go 2-0. And Kier's going 0-0 there, which is an interesting one. That'll be enough for Treaty. Right, the final El Clasico of the season, the final game of the season for both of these teams. Athlone against Longford. Athlone let a 2-0 lead slip against UCD.
Yeah.
Longford winning for the fourth game in a row. Can they make it 5 on the spin against their local rivals?
I think they can. And actually, if Longford Town, just for example, won this game 18-0, oh, no, no. No, no, it's not. Never mind. Yeah.
18 might be a bit much. I'm going to go 3-1 to Longford Town, though.
Yeah, I'm going to go something similar. I think, and to be fair, when I was chatting to Wayne after the game on Friday, he did mention that Longford done really well, very strong end to the season, 4 games on the bounce. Don't shit on that now.
Yeah.
Against in El Clasico, which is important for the club and players, obviously, but also a kid teaming at the bottom of the table who haven't picked up a win in God knows how long. So I don't think Longford won was that long ago, right?
Oh, yeah.
So Longford don't want to give anything over in that respect. So yeah, I'm going to go for a 2-0 win to Longford Town.
Very good. So I've gone 3-1. When I spoke to Kira, she went 1-1. And then just as I went to hang up the phone, she said, you know, I'll change it to 2-1 Longford. So
thank you, Kira.
She's staying another while. Finn Harps, the wedding's still on. Finn Harps against UCD is the last one.
Yeah, Finn Harps playing at the moment. They're drawing 1 apiece with Kerry. I think UCD, like, will they be gunning for it to get into third spot? Why not? You want to be, you know, tipping away nicely. They've been a bit up and down themselves. You know, they did well. Mad result coming through when I was streaming on Friday, the 2-0 to Athlone, I think up at half time. But then Athlone shit the togs themselves. I'm gonna go for a 2-0 win, excuse me, to UCD.
I'm going 2-1, and so is Kira. So that is the predictions league, right? Yeah, that was Series 9, Episode 33. We're brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting, and AV solutions. We'll probably see Anthony on Friday for one last time for the derby. But for this week, from Kieran, from Gary, thanks for listening, and come on, you boys in green.
Thanks for listening. Check out BetweenTheStripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.